Hi folks, welcome back to another one of our political chats. I'm joined by Dan and we're going to be talking about the drama on the right. Now, I actually don't like drama. I never want drama. I'm the sort of person who prefers to build coalitions. But at the moment, the right is incredibly fractured and it doesn't look like there's any bloody hope of it getting back together because of personalities involved. And I'm not even saying that people on either side of the question aren't in some way justified, but the cold hard facts are the left are currently pulling it back together and the right is not.
So a split right is something that we could indulge quite safely a year ago because the left was hopelessly split. You had the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, the Lib Dems, the Greens. You know, you had so many parties on the left. Yep. It was perfectly acceptable to do, but yeah, it looks like they're getting the band back together, and it's got to focus minds on our side as well.
Yeah. Before we begin, Islander 6 is on sale. It is amazing, especially my essay about the scouring of the Shire. I'm very proud of it. But there's an absolute bevy of amazing essays in there, all couched in the most beautiful aesthetics. So link will be in the description. shop.locis.com. Go and get it while you can. So let's begin on the polls, the poll of polls, because everyone throws out like, oh, here's a poll from whoever, as if this is the most relevant and important thing. I mean,
this looks like a week behind as well.
It is a week behind. That's the thing. Yeah. But this is going to be, I think, roughly updated to look something like this. So this is YouGov's latest poll from the 2nd and 3rd of August. And YouGov, whether you like them or not, have been a remarkably accurate pollster. Normally, their polls look exactly like the poll of polls. And so, okay, great. That's, I think, probably the best way to go. And this is the most recent data that we have. As you say, this is a week behind. I'm waiting for this to update. I was hoping it'd be updated.
I do want to caution reform supporters, because I think a lot of them have oversimplified how it works in electoral politics. That because they've currently got the biggest number, as long as their number is 24 and Labour is 23, that means they win. That's not how it works in our parliamentary system. Because what you will find, and I can guarantee this, at the next election, The Guardian, The Mirror, and a whole bunch of them will be publishing whole page spreads before the election, which is, if you live in this seat, you should vote tactically for this. So actually, Labour don't need the biggest number. It helps if they have the biggest number. But if it's as close as that, 24 versus 23, and there's tactical voting between the 23, the 12, and the 11, maybe even a bit of the 19, they can actually win while being behind on the overall vote share.
But also, it's even without tactical voting, there are clusters of votes in the country which are not properly represented.
Yes.
With just an overall national share, the Lib Dems being the best example. They'll probably get about 50 seats, somewhere between like 40 and 50 seats in the next election. Yep. Because
it's focused.
They're heavily clustered in the southwest of England.
And the right-wing problem has always been, the Conservatives have this a lot, is you'd have these rural seats where they would stack up a majority of, you know, 23,000 votes.
Yep.
But the problem is you only need one of those in their majority. The other 22,999 are wasted votes. So even if your vote share looks good, if you're piling up huge majorities in places where you've already won,
yes,
yeah, it doesn't help you. So electoral politics have always favoured the left.
Well, in first past the post in, yeah, Britain as well. So anyway, let's talk about the current trends that we're looking at. Obviously, we're seeing the burn and bounce here, which is something, but not that much. I mean, if you go back...
Well, this is a week out of date.
But
I think it will recede a bit, he's definitely going to get an uplift against Starmer.
Yeah, but I think that's already happened. And I think I actually trust YouGov's polling more than anyone else's, because it tends to reflect the average on the Politico poll of polls. But if you go back, you know, before Andy Burnham, Labour's, yeah, on like 16, 17, it's really, really bad. You know, like, yeah, I think there was a bit where they got 16 on the average. Well, maybe 17.
It wasn't that long ago when you and I were looking at opinion polls showing Labour getting 4 seats.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so it was really bad. But the burn and bounce has happened, and it's given them about 4 or 5 points. Okay, that's not bad. It's not terrible. It's not incredible, though. Because, again, if we go back just, you know, 3 years ago, Labour were on 45%. So this is good for Labour, because it's not the complete catastrophic destruction of their party.
I think a Labour apparatchik would have given their left arm for this a year ago.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, Starmer, you know, Morgan McSweeney was probably desperate for numbers like this.
Yeah.
but it's bad compared to where Labour was just before Starmer came in. I mean, Starmer was the party leader before the election at this sort of point. He was the party leader when they were at 44%. And then obviously it was downhill ever since. But this is a start, right? It's only been 2 weeks. This is a start. And so Burnham has the ability to claw back at least something. Now, another thing you'll notice here is that Reform are also on the downswing. And so it is very tempting to say, there must be some sort of correlation here. But actually, I'm not sure that there is. The Conservatives have continued their slow creep back up to 20%.
They're slowly firming up.
Yes. Again, the Conservatives didn't crater either, but they did lose a lot of support. I mean, you can see where the reform-minded Conservatives decided to leave the Conservative Party and join Reform.
Yes.
About here, right? Reform have also been taking off of Labour. But that doesn't mean that Labour are taking off Reform. Now, there was a really great... interview with John Curtis on The Times, where he points out actually what's happening here is that Labour is taking off the Greens and the Lib Dems.
So you can see
the Lib Dems and the Greens are both on downswing here, down to sort of 10, 11.
I mean, that was a point I made on this show months ago, is that, you know, inside the Labour Party, there was two factions, and one was saying...
Well, there are more than two factions.
Well, yes, but there's two broad strains of thought, one of which saying we've got to go after the Reform voters, and the other one saying we've got to go after the left-wing voters, the Green voters. And I said, obviously, it's the left-wing voters. Yeah. And Burnham, he has picked a course. He's not primarily going after Reform voters, he's going after Green voters.
Yes.
And clearly, it's working.
And that's really interesting as well, because Starmer decided he wouldn't go after any voters. Starmer decided he was going to go after the civil service vote, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, we've got a huge civil service, but it's not that big.
And they're all voting for him anyway.
And they're all already on board. So, yeah, exactly. So this the Reform are losing to Restore, who are holding on 3%, 4% in the YouGov poll, and the Conservative minor resurgence. Up to 19-20%. So that's, I think, who Reform are losing to. And Labour are, of course, as we said, getting from the left, not from the right. And this is John Curtis's opinion. Now, this is interesting because it puts Reform in a bit of a bind, because they seem to be tanking because of the scandals associated with them. Now, whether you like it or not, and just a quick thing on this as well, they've started calling Nigel Farage's what I suppose we would call corruption scandal, taking money without declaring it, is some form of political corruption. They started calling it sleaze.
That always used to be reserved for sex scandals.
Yes, sexual impropriety.
Yes.
Is a sleaze scandal. But they're calling this a sleaze scandal. And I think that Nigel Farage really should actually draw them up on this and say, look, you are deliberately giving the British public a misinformed perception of what I've done here. Because, I mean, if he was spending £5 million on prostitutes or something, maybe you could call it sleaze. But as far as we know, he's spending it on Lamborghinis or Ferraris or whatever it was said to Nick.
Security, apparently.
Allegedly security as well.
Yes.
Or his houses, or whatever.
It's a funny way that political language goes. Like, now everything in America, the slightest scandal is referred to something gate.
Yes.
I guess we've just reached the point where everything is now sleaze.
Yeah. But the media isn't letting these go because Nigel has had no good answer to this. I mean, you'll remember that he's said that it was for his defence. He could spend it however he liked. It was a reward for Brexit. It was, you know, he's got multiple different answers. And until he can find a good way of deflecting this attack, then he doesn't really have anywhere to go.
Well, the point is the press smell blood in the water, and they are going into frenzy mode because whenever they... They have a good sense for when a politician can knock something out of the way. And when a politician flounders, they can also sense that it's because we might actually get a scalp here. And they can't help themselves when they feel that.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is why he's called the by-election in Clacton, which itself seemed like a clever move until it became evident that it wasn't clever.
It was really clever for about 12 hours until...
Until Restore led the way and said, well, we're not going to contest what is obviously a kind of caricature of an election. And so it leaves him fighting Count Binface primarily.
And there's no way to win that.
No, I mean, he is going to win by a landslide.
But there's no way to win it and look good, because you either lose to a bin, in which case you look stupid, or you win against a bin. And
I hate this characterization as well. It's not winning against a bin. It's winning against a parody character.
Well, yes.
But even then, I mean, it does show that the establishment's man in Clacton is still going to get 20% of the vote. So 20% of Clacton is prepared. They hate Nigel Farage so much that they're prepared to vote for the comedy candidate to spite him. Now, obviously, yes, this is, you know, not nearly enough for Nigel Farage to lose, but now he has to spend the next couple of months campaigning in his own constituency.
Well, and being out of the national political fight.
Yeah.
Doing all of the
being very sidetracked.
Yeah. Or building a party, recruiting candidates, doing all of those things. Yeah. So that he could win against a figurative bin.
Yeah, he really hasn't done himself any favours here. So let's go back to the Manchester mayoral by-election, which just happened. So on a 25% turnout, so there were 2 million registered electors, and only 500,000 of them turned out. And of course, Labour got 250,000 of those nearly. But as you can see, Reform only got 21%, which is not great. And Restore Britain got 8.7%, which is better than the bloody Conservatives.
Yeah.
We've got 7.7%. We'll come back to this in a bit.
It wasn't that long ago when polling was showing that Reform were going to win
everything,
the Manchester.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally everything.
Yeah.
People were absolutely sick of Labour. They were happy to go for Reform because Reform weren't the Tories. And for some reason, the lustre has disappeared.
Yep. Same for Makerfield.
Well, yes, exactly. Gordon and Denton, Makerfield, and now Manchester Mayor.
They keep being shown that they're going to win something, and then when it actually comes to it, they don't.
And this is another one of those things. Okay, you didn't inspire people to turn out, because the 25% turnout is basically the lowest turnout they've ever had for the Manchester mayoral election. Like, normally they get about 30%, 35%. 25%. I mean, you know, it's got the atmosphere of a by-election, because Andy Burnham, of course, ended up calling this because he won in Makerfield, and therefore he gives up the mayoral position, which just hands it off to another Labour person. But again, it's one of those things, right? It's yet another by-election failure. And when you add that to the local elections where Reform underperformed, and you start to get a pattern of these people are not actually winners, right?
I mean, it's been a worrying while since they've actually had a win.
Yes. Was it Sarah Poaching, I think, was the last proper win they had?
Yes, so, yeah.
She only won by like a couple of percentage points, right?
Yeah.
It was on a knife edge with Poaching in Runcorn.
But, I mean, if they'd just maintained that momentum and the polling had held up, I mean, they should have won Gordon and Denton. They should have won Makerfield.
Yeah.
They should have won this.
In particular, Gordon and Denton, they should have won. I mean, 30% Muslim going to the Greens, okay, but why weren't you converting all of those white working, like 66% were still white working class English, and half of them voted for Labour. Why was that the case? You know, you should have been out there, and that was before Andy Burnham. You know, remember Starmer prevented Andy Burnham from running.
Yeah, that would have been the nadir of Starmer's popularity as well. So
absolutely.
Everyone hates that Starmer. One is actually really inexcusable.
And they still lost something like 9,000 votes to Labour. Which would have been the winning ticket.
And they can't blame Restore for that one, because Restore weren't in it.
Nope. So it's one of those things where, and I'm not trying to gloat or anything like that. This is a genuine problem for Reform. Why are you not making headway? For example, the turnout being so low, why didn't? Because, I mean, Birmingham is still about 40% white British.
Manchester.
Manchester. It's Manchester's probably slightly higher white British, actually. Why didn't those people decide, right, we are going to come out for Reform? I mean, who's Sian Astley? Do you know anything about that candidate?
No.
No, neither do I. And I pay attention to politics a lot.
Yes.
And yet, for some reason, that name never went anywhere. Like, I don't know anything about Bev Craig either. So, like I said, I'm not trying to gloat or anything.
No.
This is a genuine and existential problem for Reform.
Yes.
If you can't actually beat the Labour Party or the Greens, what are we doing? Right? What is the point of this? Why are you failing?
I mean, this was why we on the right collectively destroyed the Conservative Party, because, you know, they betrayed us, and you know we need a vehicle.
Yes.
And it's not looking like Reform are delivering.
Well, let's talk about the vehicle, shall we? Because Reform began as quite a big tent. Right? It actually was a fairly big tent.
Big tents win elections.
And it is exactly true that big tents win elections. And following in the pattern of Keir Starmer kicking out his left, Nigel Farage decided he would kick out his right. Because, remember, they made false allegations against Rupert Lowe, which they have since doubled down on in public.
Well, there was that rare moment where Farage went up on stage and basically admitted it was because...
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But the point being is that the police were like, yeah, no, we've considered a number of witness statements, there's insufficient evidence, there's nothing here.
There's right? quite a lot of harassment of Rupert Lowe that went on before they came to that.
Yeah.
Realization that there's nothing going on here.
Yeah. So there's nothing here, right? Mm. Now, they have continued making this allegation. And in fact, Raheem Kassam made this allegation again yesterday. Rupert Lowe got kicked out because he was abusive towards staff and kept veering into other people's policy lanes. The party was working on a serious deportation policy and he just kept lobbing bombs. Unsustainable. Okay, but we know that that's not why he got kicked out. I mean, we'll just refresh everyone's memory because Farage told us.
Mm. You know, people think, oh, Farage has done it. We'll just set a party up. It'll be marvellous. We'll sweep the next election. It just isn't as easy as that. Now, does he have a profile on X? Yes, he does. Is Elon going to support him? Probably. But you see, you know, when he stood up and said that we've got to consider the mass deportation of entire communities, including those born in the United Kingdom, that just moves way beyond a point of reasonableness, of decency, of morality. And that was the moment at which, you know, I realised we just had to get rid of him and get rid of him as quickly as we could. And I think in terms of the way we dealt with that, we were probably more brutal than the other parties. But you know what? That's the way it's going to be. Thank you.
I mean, yeah. By brutal, you made up malicious charges against him with the intention of getting him put in jail, that he then had to be investigated by the police, have his house raided, had his gun seized, spend countless hours with his barrister because he said that there needed to be mass deportations. And when Farage says that was the moment we realised that we couldn't have him anymore, that's also the moment where about a quarter of Reform said, yeah, we can't stay in Reform anymore.
That's correct. So, exactly as you say, a very large portion of the Reform base and of voters, this is, took that as a signal that Nigel Farage is simply not going to go to the right.
No.
In the same way that when Jeremy Corbyn was kicked out of Labour, that was a huge signal to the base in Labour, the left-wing base in Labour, yep. That, oh no, Keir Starmer is not our guy, he's not going to go to the left. We will find somewhere else.
Well, the mistake that both of them are making there is as we know, we've said many times, Nigel will throw out anyone who's one inch to his right. Now, that's fine if he is the most right-wing person in Reform, bar two or three people. Because yeah. Kicking out yeah. your right-wing flank doesn't actually lose many people.
Yeah, if he was kicking out Nick Griffin,
yes.
Then sure, it wouldn't be that big a deal.
But I think Farage misunderstood where he is in right-wing thought. He's not the most right-wing man in Britain.
I think he's not more right-wing than his own voters. I think
no.
You've made no. this point many times. His voters think he's going to put immigrants into a bloody blender and puree them.
Well, I mean, as we come on to talk about Rupert's deal, there's nothing in there that his voters don't think he's already signed up to.
Yeah. In fact,
Starmer did the same thing. He thought that he was the most left-wing person in the Labour Party, and it turns out, actually, no, there's a vast amount more left to him, and they all went off and formed the Green Party.
Yeah, there's a Zach Polanski out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about Rupert Lowe's deal, right? So Rupert Lowe put out this 12-minute video saying, look, Nigel, I realise we've had our disagreements, but for the sake of the country, we should work together. Now, yes. There's a lot to be said about this, and we'll get into the actual content of it shortly, but this was widely perceived by Reform supporters as being a trap, as in the actual requirements that Rupert Lowe has set out for his cooperation here are too hard edge, they're too hard line, they're too right wing for Nigel Farage to countenance, and
God forbid an actual right wing policy.
well, yeah, that's that. No, I mean,
can't have that. You know, what do you think we are? A right wing party?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what the objections have been, right?
Yes,
they're couched in such a way that they are too hardline, too right-wing for Nigel Farage to accept. And everyone knows this in advance because, of course, he said when he's kicking him out. Well, he's saying kick out people who are complicit with the rape gangs, even if they themselves weren't personally rapists, and that's just beyond morality, beyond decency. Yeah,
we've got to keep the family of rapists.
Yeah, and that gives the rapists themselves a claim to stay in the country because, of course, their families are...
Oh, yeah, they've got a right to family life, so we can't get rid of them either.
Exactly. So basically, Nigel Farage has arrived at the same point as Andy Burnham.
Before you go on to talk about what's in the list of requests, can I just point out what is not in there?
Yes.
Because a lot of Reform voters or commentators misunderstood this. At no point does Rupert Lowe say, I want a job, yep, I want a position, I want to be Chancellor, Foreign Secretary. Yep. He doesn't say, I want positions for any of my team. Mm-hmm. He's saying that there's none of that in there. And a lot of Reform supporters think that's what he said. He didn't say any of that. What he said was, you can have it all. You can have the whole government. I just want these five things.
Yes. And this is what it very similar to Nigel standing down in 2019 with the Brexit Party for Boris, yes, Johnson. Right? It was on the assumption, yes, that we'd do Brexit.
You give me Brexit, you can have it all.
Yes. And of course, Boris, the perennial backstabber that he is, betrayed, yes, us on that. And then he betrayed us on immigration and betrayed us on just anything, yep, else you can think of Boris doing. But Nigel wasn't really to know that in advance, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, maybe you could have said, but isn't Boris a congenital wet lib, basically a liberal Democrat wearing human skin? And isn't it predictable that he's going to be a wet lib when he's a prime minister?
There's also a timing issue around... It's questionable. I've heard people, insiders from both sides, tell me they don't necessarily think that Farage was conned. But what happened is Farage's people agreed it, Boris agreed it, and then Boris went to the wider shareholders, the, you know, the party chairmen, the rest of the people in the Tory party, and they threw their toys out the pram and said, never are we going to do this deal. Yeah. But Farage had already announced he was standing down, and then Boris was supposed to go up and say, and we're going to give them, you know, however many seats. But by then, there had already been an internal Tory party rebellion. And so they actually, yeah, just said, yeah, we're just going to take it all. So Farage got completely outplayed on that one and ended up standing down entirely as opposed to a pact, which he was actually hoping for.
Yeah. And so, as you say, this is basically what Rupert Lowe is offering Nigel Farage. Mm. On the assumption, I suppose, that Nigel Farage is more trustworthy than Boris Johnson. I mean, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, So because he doesn't lay out what it would look... I mean, he says cooperation. It's not a merger. It's cooperation.
Well, I mean, Restore sent an email around saying, obviously, this doesn't mean a merger.
Yes.
This means an electoral pact.
So that could mean a number of things. And it could be, you know, these are our policy positions. If you do it exactly like this, then maybe we stand down entirely.
Yeah.
But it could also be, look, if you give us most of this, we stand down in whatever percentage of seats.
Yeah. Now, how to put this? I'm not sure that could ever have worked, right? So an electoral pact between, say, Farage and Boris Johnson actually makes sense, right? Because Farage can win in constituencies where the Conservatives have no penetration. Right? If you look at the northern constituencies, a lot of northern voters are patriots. And so they're happy to vote for Reform, but they have been their entire lives conditioned to despise the Tories.
Yes.
So these people are in places where the Tories basically have no real penetration, especially after Boris now, right? So there's a lot of northern voters who definitely, I mean, they were prepared to take a risk with Boris, but even then there are a lot of places that didn't. You know, a lot of places
that could just never, ever bring themselves to vote Tory,
yeah,
under any circumstance.
That could potentially have voted for Nigel Farage. And so Farage saying to the Tories, look, I've got a constituency of voters you will never have access to that I can help utilise in getting you to your destination.
You can say to the Tories, you're never going to win in Gorton and Denton, so let me lose it for you.
Basically, yeah. Okay, that's basically correct, yeah. That's... Or Manchester, or Makerford. Anyway,
yes.
The point is, yes, that's completely true, right? But so the Reform have got a constituency that the Conservatives can never reach. But conversely, that while that's true for Restore, and we'll come back to that in a bit, it's not necessarily that they're in different locations.
It's not clear whether there is great overlap between Restore and Reform, or whether there's points of difference. Are there bits where they just were? I mean, to be fair though, Nigel Farage does have a very large personal unfavourability rating.
Yes,
and so maybe, I mean, you'd have to do a bit of work on it. But where are those places where, well, they just can't stand Farage? In which case, though, you could do a pact.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Right. So it's not as clear that such a thing would be as self-evident and useful as it would be between Reform and Conservatives. However, so we'll leave that for now, and we'll come back to it in a bit, because I do have some more information on it. So anyway, what does Rupert Lowe offer? Well, he's got 5 points that he wants Reform to commit to. The first being mass deportation of illegal immigrants, including women and children. Tougher rules on legal immigration, such as a ban on halal and kosher slaughter, the ban on the burqa, cousin marriage, and Sharia courts. He wants a referendum on the death penalty. He wants welfare cuts to fund self-sufficiency, and the exclusion of former Tory ministers from any future cabinet. Now, going through those, the first one, the deportation of illegals, including women and children, Farage could probably agree to this. Now, he's got a bit of a soppy, wet side, where he's just like, oh, I don't know, I'm a bit squeamish about deporting even women and children. But I think you could probably get him over the line on that, right?
Tough. Yeah, I mean, the point one, a lot of people would say that's already Reform policy. Where it goes further is the deportations program.
Yeah.
Which Farage has explicitly ruled out. So, but there's a bit of ground to close there, but it's not utterly impossible.
But I think that Reform have been, in the last year or so, bullied into the position of...
It's very ambiguous. Yeah. The way I would put it is Zaha Yusuf absolutely wants to do mass deportations. Other members, you know, the Danny Krugers, absolutely do not. Yeah. And we're unclear currently where Farage himself stands on it, because he's kind of vacillating. The last time we got a definitive out of him, it was Stephen Edgerton, where he's saying it's literally impossible to do deportations, won't happen, you know, violently shaking his head.
But the ground has been since cleared.
Maybe he's moved on that.
Yeah, well, this is the way that Farage always works. He's never at the crest of the wave. He always waits for the ground to be cleared so it's safe to move into.
Yes.
And at the moment, the ground has been cleared on just deporting every goddamn illegal, right?
Yes.
Like, there's just no justification to have any of them in the country, regardless of who they are or what their state
is. So maybe we can agree on point one, borders.
So I think
Farage requires a bit of backbone.
Yeah, exactly. But he can definitely be pushed into that position.
Yes.
Right? Whether he'll actually do it if he became the Prime Minister, an entirely different question. But at least verbally, rhetorically, he can be pushed into that position.
Yes.
So that's something.
I'll give you that, yep.
The next one being tougher rules on legal migration. Maybe you could get that. You know, maybe he's probably said an Australian point-style system at some point in the past.
I think this is the one they're most divergent on.
Well, it's not that in and of itself. It's the ban on halal and kosher slaughter, the burqa, cousin marriage, and Sharia courts. I mean, maybe he'd ban the burqa, cousin marriage, and Sharia courts, right? They're fairly, from a kind of...
He's not banning kosher, though.
He's absolutely not. From a British value perspective, you know, the burqa, cousin marriage, and Sharia courts were all against British values. Okay, Nigel Farage could make that argument.
Yes.
And he could end up moving on this.
But there's potential ground there in the maybe labelling.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You know, anything that's kosher or halal has to be clearly labelled. Well, shops that do only that need to be clearly signposted, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, a lot of them do signpost halal as an advert to Muslims, though.
Yeah.
They say, this is halal meat in this.
A little bit more explicit.
Yeah.
I mean, the broader point on this one. So to be fair, with all of these, as we're going through them, some of them, Rupert used terms like offer.
Yes.
And other times he used terms like must in full, red line, stuff like that. And for these first two, he was using a lot of that language, must, full, red lines, things like that. But even within that, there's a lot of wiggle room as to, okay, well, how actually does it work?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a negotiation, this is a proposal.
Yes.
So
he's certainly putting his strongest foot forward. But what I'm saying is, even though there appears to be a lot of difference between them, and it does... At a minimum, it does require Reform to be at the absolute bravest end of everything they flirted with.
Yeah.
it's not an insurmountable gap.
No, and I'm sure that Reform, Restore and Rupert would be able to compromise on some of it, right? As in, yes. Even though you say, look, I want these things, that doesn't mean you're not going to compromise.
Yeah, like, okay, we won't ban kosher, but everything is clearly labelled, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That you might bridge that bit.
Yeah. One interesting point on the migration section is Rupert Lowe using the term demographic security.
Yeah, they don't like that.
No, they don't. I believe I'm the person who came up with that on Andrew Gold's podcast. Right. When talking to him after he did his Steve Laws interview, I was like,
yes.
It's not unreasonable for us to want demographic security. And I think the term has stuck, yes, because I think it does genuinely describe something that we are entitled to, right? Yes.
But again, Farage has been, in the past, I will say, very clearly against that. He's been explicitly asked a number of times, do you care if Britain is no longer a white country in the future? And his answer has been an emphatic no.
And I mean, Richard Tice said, well, I'll be long gone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it doesn't matter because I'll be dead by then. Yeah. So you know, I will admit that tonally, under Zaya, they have been shifting that way. Yep. But, I mean... It's always what Rupert is asking is go right to the edge of everything you flirted with, i.e. what he's saying is be as brave as you can be.
Yeah, and yeah, it's hard to imagine them doing it. So the third point being a referendum on the death penalty, I honestly think Farage is too wimpy to try and countenance this.
I mean, on one hand, this is the easy one because a referendum doesn't...
Takes it out of your hands.
Yeah, and it doesn't preclude Farage from campaigning on the other side.
Absolutely.
It
would be a bit strange if he did. But then David Cameron did the same with Brexit.
Yeah. So you might think this one is easy. I suspect for Rupert, again, this one is not an emphatic red line. I mean...
Yeah, I imagine it's the sort of thing that can percolate in the background and we just keep putting the pressure on until eventually...
Yeah, I mean, nobody on the right thinks that Rudolf Axel Cabana... could, you know, should be alive.
Axel Rudi Cabana,
yeah. But there is some concerns on the right. Okay, well, what if I start getting executed for tweets? Which in any other country would sound absurd, but perhaps not Britain.
Then, obviously, welfare cuts to fund self-sufficiency. Farage, I don't doubt, can agree to this. And the weird...
Well, four is all standard right-wing thought.
Yeah, yeah. No one on the right.
Four is easy. Yeah,
But the fifth and final one, which was Farage's absolute red line, was the exclusion of former Tory ministers from any future cabinet.
Yeah.
What?
Again, to be fair, I've got my deal-making hat. You can see I used to make deals for a living as a venture capitalist. Yeah. To be fair, I was very careful on the wording here. He doesn't name names.
He doesn't.
The qualifier is failed former Tory ministers.
Ah.
So we could decide that because Jenrick and Suella quit their posts in protests, that removes the qualifier failed.
Jenrick was kicked out of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, fair point.
But they are still...
The point is, you can smooth the words.
Yeah, yeah. The argument I suppose you could make is, well, they are MPs.
You could make the argument that no more Tories, but we give a...
Well, no, you could draw a distinction. So, for example, Nadine Dorries and Nadeem Zahawi are failed.
Oh, yeah, obviously they go.
They're not MPs.
Nobody wants them anyway.
But Braverman and Jenrick are MPs, so of course they've succeeded, right?
Yes.
So you could make that argument.
Yes.
But I was surprised that this was his red line. Anyway, so, I mean, as we've said... it's been interesting how the term demographic security has been dropped from the discourse on this.
So I noticed that a whole bunch of Reform influencers have been talking about this. They always either omit demographic security entirely or they rename it to something else,
yes,
that sounds unreasonable, like kicking out Islam or something.
And that is, frankly, the key point of all of British politics.
Because they know they're weak there.
Yeah. And there's no particular reason they have to be weak there. Because the polling's all been done. We know that half the country is like, look, we have to do something about getting rid of millions of people. Right? That's half the country thinks that. It's like, why are... And everyone thinks these people are illegal as well. Yep. Like, they're like, God, there are a lot of illegals around. It's like, no, I've got some bad news for you, friend. They're all illegal.
So that was my first take on this list, these 5 points, is I think like 99% of Reform voters think...
That's what he's...
Everything on those 5 points is existing Reform policy.
Yes.
And actually there were a whole bunch of, not the big accounts, because they know what's going on,
yeah,
but the smaller accounts, a bunch of them are like looking at this and saying,
what's the
well, that's an easy deal.
Yeah.
We're doing all of this anyway.
Yeah.
But and that's why there is a difference between reform and restore, is because actually we know that they're not signed up to demographic security. They're not going to do all of this stuff.
They're not signed up to almost any of it, really. They like you say, they
flirted close to bits of it.
The welfare cuts are probably the most guaranteed thing on that, right?
even then, they guaranteed the triple lock.
Yeah, because, of course, a huge percentage of Reform's voter base are pensioners, and very few young people. So worth remembering that Nigel Farage hasn't always had a red line on Tories being in his future cabinet, right? In fact, it used to be in 2024 that he ruled out having Tories in his party, calling them, quote, poison.
Well, and we all know what he was saying about Jenrick a few weeks before he came on board.
Yeah, and for some reason he decided, no, I'm going to take Jenrick, which was weird.
I mean, Jenrick and Suella, I can get my head around. It was the other gun. Oh, the
Nadeem Zahan.
Yeah.
Or
Doris.
Why do you want these people? Because I guess former Tory MPs. Anyway, so Farage actually replied to this with a statement initially, right, saying that the next election will be an existential fight to save the country we love, a mission I've been fighting for over 30 years. It's like, okay, well, at least we agree that the situation is dire, the hour is late, and there is something that needs to be done about this.
Yes. But you're going to read this all out, because I've read it several times and I haven't got the faintest clue what he's saying.
I'm not going to read it all, right? No. But he is rather mealy-mouthed with this.
I haven't got a clue what he's saying. What's the action here?
He said, I don't know. There is no particular action. It seems to be a way to try and essentially diffuse the strength of Rupert Lowe's.
I think it's a way of saying I've responded without having committed yourself to anything at all or necessarily made any points.
Agreed, but there are some important points in here, right? He says, look, I understand Reform UK will need the support of people from other parties as well as millions who have never voted before. That is the broad coalition I am building. So, okay, good. I'm glad you accept that the British right needs to be a broad tent. Mm. How have you done anything to build a broad coalition?
Well, he's created parties to the right of him by kicking out everybody who's to the right of him.
That seems to be building a narrower coalition.
Yes, actually, that's a fair point. Yes.
That seems to be making sure that actually anyone who, like you say, is a day early and a step to the right to Farage is not included, because it might be uncomfortable when he's next interviewed by Beth Rigby, who says, but what about this person who said on social media?
I figured out how he's building a broad coalition by taking any Tory who's given up on the Tories into Reform.
And saving the rest of us from them.
Yes.
So he says, over the last 18 months, I have demonstrated that our movement will always be open to anyone who shares our commitment to restoring Britain's borders, rebuilding our economy, renewing our democracy, and putting the British people first. And notice he doesn't say demographic security.
Well, I believed in all of that, and you kicked me out as well. It wasn't just Rupert. I mean, there were quite a lot of people who had been kicked out of Reform.
Yeah, Bo as well. But the point is, you guys are just, the most, from our perspective, the most notables of a giant pile of people who have been ejected from Reform for wanting all of those things.
The vast majority you've never heard of. Yes. They just received an email one day saying you're out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Steve Laws was a candidate for them.
Yeah.
Back in 24 or 25, I can't remember
which. Oh, he was an MEP, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't an MEP, but he was a candidate for them.
Ah.
Not Stephen Wolfe, Steve Laws. But the point is, you haven't done this, right? This is always been the case. And my previous history in politics has shown that I'm always prepared to put my country before my party, as I did in 2019, but I will never turn my back on my team. Now, he said this multiple times. It's like, well, there are a lot of people that you stabbed in the back.
Yeah, and
But the most important one being Rupert Lowe.
Yeah.
The fact that you're even having this dialogue with someone you had previously stabbed in the back shows that you will turn your back on your
team. I mean, that was an extraordinary thing to. And I mean, I just quickly add on the discussion that Carl and I have just had there. You know, if you're, I don't know, you know, not familiar with the British scene, you're American or whatever, you will find this extraordinary to believe, but it's genuinely true. Reform is the main right wing party in this country. Hire Hope Not Hate, which is a communist agitator. Not only are they a communist agitator doxing organization, they're actually one of their former directors is now chief of staff to the Labour Party, Andy Burnham's, right? And Reform use Hope Not Hate, this communist agitators, to vet their candidates.
So I want to correct you on that. This information came from Gwaine Towler, and it wasn't that Reform did this. It was their UKIP. When Nigel Farage was in charge of UKIP, they did it in UKIP. Now, I don't know if they still do it, but the point is they used to do it, right? It is Gwaine Towler and Nigel Farage. There's a continuum of the parties that they have been in together. It was UKIP, then it was the Brexit Party, now it's Reform.
So they're keeping quiet about whether this is still a method.
I don't know.
It is the case. It is the case because Nigel Farage, Richard Tice got asked about this on TV, and he said, why wouldn't we let them vet?
He said he's letting the media vet his candidates. That wasn't Hope Not Hate. But there's no particular difference between the media and Hope Not Hate in the principles that they espouse.
Yes.
And the media, of course, are often informed by some hit piece from Hope Not Hate.
Well, and to give you one concrete example, Bo of the show, he was kicked out because of a Hope Not Hate piece.
Yes. So it's not that they don't allow Hope Not Hate to browbeat them all the time. They do. But it's not directly hiring them.
Right. It's just they're not paying them.
No, they're just letting them do it for free.
Yes.
Anyway, so he posted this, and then he released a proposal to create Fortress Britain or Fortress Europe. I can't remember which one it was. Before we go on to that, it's important to remember that Nigel Farage actually provoked this conversation. So this is the video he put out after the Makerfield by-election, where he goes, that wasn't a great result. Don't know why we lost. Restore voters, what do you want?
It's only a few seconds. If you go to 38 seconds...
I like that you've got it memorised. Well,
yes. But it's only a few seconds after 38.
But I would say this. There's a couple of thousand voters there who would normally have gone out and voted Reform, that voted Restore. And I would say directly to them, what do you want?
There you go.
There we go. Right. So what do you want? We are the challenger party to the right, he says. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, one, I guess at the very minimum, we want Rupert Lowe and all of our guys included in the Big Ten, right?
Well, mind you, that's not what Rupert asked for. No, he just asked for five principles. But he asked for borders, demographics, death penalty, self-sufficiency, and political trust.
Yes, and don't get me wrong, these are all things that we want. But if you want our votes, you're going to have to include us in the Big Ten by saying, no, these are the five things that... I mean, again, it's not even all of these five things that people wouldn't compromise on. It's primarily demographic security.
Yes.
We need to know that our grandchildren will not be a hated minority in our ancestral homeland. If you can't commit to that, Nigel, you will not get my vote ever under any circumstance. Even if I am in a constituency where it's a hopeless cause and Restore could never win and Reform are like neck and neck with Labour... I will not vote for you if you cannot guarantee that.
I think I should explain the logic of that to any Reform people watching, because they do get very hung up on, well, we've got the biggest number in the polls and therefore everybody should just bail in and follow us.
Well, then I should vote Labour on that bloody ground.
Yeah, let me explain it clearly to Reformers listening. If we don't have demographic security, it is the absolute key thing for us, then on our current track... we will become a minority in our own country in 2063.
Yes.
And if Reform come in but don't address demographic security, but they do a bit of tightening at the border, instead of becoming a minority in our own country in 2063, it moves to 2068. So we buy ourselves 5 years. Now, for me, I suppose getting those extra 5 years is better than nothing, but it's pretty close to nothing.
Yeah. Great.
So... you know, you can't get me over the line by saying that we're ahead in the polls, you should vote for any party that describes itself as nominally right wing.
Yes.
Because for me, keeping my country is it's not a negotiable factor.
It's the only thing that matters.
Yes.
And the thing is as well, if you're saying, look, we are the thing that is essentially in the way of you keeping your country.
Yes.
What you say is you need to start attacking us as hard as you can. Right, because we're gonna sit here and say no. We're not gonna ensure that your grandchildren, your children and grandchildren, are the demographic majority in their own country. Then it's like, okay, well, you're my primary enemy because you're closest to me.
The great threat is that Reform win on a very soft set of proposals in 2029. Everybody thinks the country's saved. I don't need to pay attention to
politics. And this is exactly what happened after Brexit.
Yes,
exactly.
What happened after Brexit. It is exactly what happened.
Interest in immigration just cratered, and then everyone's like, what the hell is going on with immigration?
Yes, and then basically we get closer to 2063 and we realise
it's too late.
We can't do anything about it now because we took our eye off the ball because we thought we had solved the problem, but we hadn't. That is why there's... I know so many of you can't get this, but that is why there was a split between reform and restore, because demographic security is the key bit and you don't have it.
And what's interesting, and I didn't want to have to bring this up, but a lot of the reform talking heads are not ethnically British.
I had noticed.
Now, I'm not a hardliner on that.
Yes.
Right, but I can't help but wonder if that feeling of separation is what bothers them about the concept of demographic security. Because, I mean, like, a lot of these people have been born and raised in England.
Yes.
And in England, given their age, where it was 95% English, right? No one was saying we have to kick out minorities. No one was saying we have to persecute minorities or anything like that. So deprive them of rights.
Well, to be fair, even Rupert Lowe isn't saying that.
No, Rupert, nobody's saying that, right? Well, I suppose like there are probably like some radical twitties.
Steve Law's saying it, sure.
But the point is, like, nobody's saying that. What we want is to return to the demographic situation that you experienced when you were young.
Yes.
You weren't being persecuted. You weren't this, you weren't that. You know, you're a patriot. You like the country. But this number matters. Right, we're currently at about 70%. That's unacceptable. Right?
I mean, on the strength of this, what we're proposing is that the proportion of white British people in Britain is at least 51%. It's not a big ask.
I mean, even then, that's terrible.
I know.
Like, but, God, but, I want but that, 90% at least.
Yeah, I know. but that it is even now, even everything Rupert is proposing, it is actually quite gentle. It's not. Marching everybody with a little bit of melanin onto a ferry and it's not that.
Yeah. But I think it has to be about 90%
for us to
have a security. Because obviously it's 70%, we're deeply insecure about these things. So anyway, Nigel released his plan to stop the small boats. Not really the issue, right? The small boat crossings, about 200,000 in total, insufferable. We are paying for them to live in rented housing or wherever else because they've been kicked out of the hotels now.
This does need to be addressed, but it doesn't actually move the dial because the stock of immigrants is so high that even if you stop the immigration, we're just going to be replaced anyway, but slower.
Yeah, because, I mean, remember, Keir Starmer was cheering that he got immigration down to 850,000 last year.
I mean, that's good when you're comparing yourself against Boris.
Yeah, which is 1.5 million.
Yes.
But that's still 850,000. That's still more than four times the number of people who cross the channel.
Yes, right? Yes.
So we legally let in, and that's the entire number of people who cross the channel. But it's the safe, edgy concern, right, for immigration.
Yes.
Oh, we're going to stop the boats because they're breaking in illegally. It's like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I care that there are millions and millions who are here.
We've got to stop the aeroplanes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah, it's the aeroplanes that are the problem. And so they can claim, oh, look, we're hard on immigration because we're doing something about the boats. It's like, okay, but that's not you being hard on immigration.
No.
Rupert Lowe is right to say, no, look, the numbers coming in legally have to stop. We have to have demographic security. Obviously, the boats have to stop, but that's a much smaller issue.
Yes.
But nobody wanted to talk about this, right? What they wanted to talk about is Rupert Lowe's proposal to Nigel Farage. And so this kept coming up in the Q&A. And this is one response that Nigel Farage gave. I don't know if we'll play the whole thing, but it's quite interesting.
On the Rupert Lowe stuff, well, my understanding is that he had a bit of a fallout last week with the Conservatives, who, you know, he had been working quite closely with for some time. You know, he said that he had a deal with the Conservatives, and Kemi Badenoch said they had an arrangement. I don't know what that was. My understanding is there was a bit of a fallout. Now, look, I mean, if you want to do a political deal with somebody, you know, you would contact them privately and not do a 12-minute video. That said, I did actually reach out back yesterday to him. I did say, look, should we have a call? I haven't heard back yet, so I don't know what the sincerity of this is. But it seemed to me that he was sort of, more than anything, perhaps putting out this gesture, saying, look, I'm the good guy, Nigel's the bad guy. Well, that's not the case. If you look at my history, you know, in politics over the last few years, I am prepared to do things and make sacrifices if I believe it's in the national interest. I certainly did that in 2019. And I would do whatever I could for us to have a sane centre-right alliance that beat Labour at the next general election. But I don't ditch my friends. I don't ditch my allies. Whether that's Suella Braverman or Posh George, you know, I do not ditch people because somebody else wants me to. And there's an irony in this, which is that 2 years ago, Rupert Lowe said what a fantastic job Jenrick, Braverman and Kruger were doing inside the Conservative Party. And, you know, unlike Chris Philp, who failed completely, but now wants us all to forget it, in the case of Braverman and Jenrick, they resigned from their positions in their frustration that the government wouldn't get a grip. So that would not be a part of a negotiation. In broader terms, look, you know, you could see a situation where Restore, without the hope of winning anything outside Great Yarmouth, I mean, literally without a hope of winning a single seat in the country, could do us great harm. And I think online you will see a lot of Restore potential voters now beginning to worry about the impact that might have. So look, I'll finalise that by saying, if it was the offer of a deal, it came in a very unusual way. I have responded to it potentially, you know, with an open mind, as I would, but I'm certainly not going to be ditching people that I view to be allies and a great asset.
That is a fascinating set of statements. So the first being the concession. Well,
there's one bit right at the beginning. I'll address it very quickly. He keeps bringing up this deal with the Conservatives. That deal was that they put Rupert Lowe on the Public Accounts Committee, and the deal was, but please treat the chairman with respect. And Rupert was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And he mentioned
that's the deal.
That was mentioned on the Jacob Rees-Mogg interview that he did with him as a throwaway line. And Reform have grasped on this and created a big conspiracy theory out of it.
Oh, I see people
I see them doing it all the time.
Yeah. Saying that they're in cahoots. No, the deal was treat the chairman of the select committee with respect. That was a deal.
And Rupert, I guess, has stood by that.
Yes.
But yeah, they've made this out to be something far greater than it obviously is. And I view that as a form of cope as well, by the way.
Yeah.
As a massive cope. It's, oh, there's a... No. Yeah. Moron. It's just be nice to us.
It's just civility. That's all it is.
It was literally just, please be civil. And he was like, yeah, okay, no problem. So anyway, another thing, though, the most important thing here is the admission that Restore could do great damage to Reform.
Well, the way he framed it the other way, he said lots of Restore voters are worried that their vote could damage us. I think it's the other way round. I think Reform is worried that Restore voters...
Well, he said that, right?
Yeah.
He said that you could see a situation where Restore could do us great harm. And so that's very interesting, because we've advanced now from when he said, yeah, I kicked Rupert out because he was going beyond the pale, but he won't get 1% anywhere, not even in Great Yarmouth. And that was before the local elections.
It's gone to... But he won't win seats outside of Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
You can just see how his process is going to evolve over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. And then, you know, if
it's going to be like, whatever it was, three weeks to beat COVID, you know, three weeks of lockdown or whatever it was.
They're the sort of like Donald Trump, sort of like, Donald Trump won't do this. Donald Trump won't. And it's like, Donald Trump won't, you know, do this. And it's like, you are here, you know, those sort of lists where it's like, right, okay, we're starting to create a list now. It won't be 1%, or he won't win outside of Great Yarmouth, or he won't do that. And it's like, okay, but what if we do, right? And in the replies, people were like, I don't ditch my friends, except for Robert Kilroy Silk, Godfrey Bloom, Douglas Carswell, Mark Reckless, Jared Batten, Ben Habib, Rupert Lowe, and countless other people. It's like, yes.
Oh, there's a score. You haven't heard of most of them because there were just members who got an email one day. But there were so many people that have been ditched over this.
Crazy that he would say this. It's like him saying, oh, I can't be bought, except on Cameo. You know, like, it's like, Nigel, no one thinks of you as that kind of hardline, principled politician. It's fine. You don't need to pretend to be honest.
Also, I've just got to come back on this one seat thing as well. I mean, bear in mind that UKIP won Clacton, his first seat, in 2014 Douglas Carswell's by-election. And then they just about held on to it in 2015, and then they lost it again. And so so this thing about, oh, you're just one seat, but that's your story as well. You started with one seat, And then you actually even lost it for a while, and then you came back in a new iteration, and you didn't get anything of that, and then you came back in another new iteration, and now, for a while, you were on the verge of being prime minister. So don't tell me that just because you're early,
yeah,
that you can't win in the end, because actually you can, and you've demonstrated that.
And you've made a call to restore voters. What is it you want?
Yeah,
how do I win you back? You
know? And here's the answer.
So exactly. And then you're like, well, I'm keeping an open mind, but I'm certainly not going to kick the Tories out of my party.
I think that point can be negotiated.
I don't know. He feels like he's quite solid on that. It's like, no, I'm not going to kick out the Tories. Like,
okay. I think Rupert might concede ground on that one. I haven't spoken to Rupert about it, and I don't know if you have, but for me, it's one and two. Because we're going to agree on four anyway, three, the death penalty that much, but one and two, those are the real red lines.
I mean, I spoke to members of the party after this, and they don't know what he's talking about with the blow-up of the Conservatives. There's not really been any change in the relationship with the Conservatives.
Well, that's because there's no deal in the first place.
Yeah.
It's just an act of civility.
Well, exactly. And but he was like, yo, they had a deal, and then that's all blown. So, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Because it's a figment of their imagination. So
Anyway, so apparently after this, Farage said that he'd reached out to Rupert Lowe for a phone call, but hadn't received a reply. And Rupert Lowe was like, well, not really. Apparently, you just texted me, we'll call later, and then you didn't call. So it's like, right, okay. I mean, it's all getting a bit like he said, she said, and sort of petty.
Yeah.
But it...
Just this stuff is getting blown out of proportion. Look,
yeah,
the point is the closest analogy I can bring is poker. So I don't know if this will make sense to people who don't play poker. But
well, I don't play poker. But carry on.
If I'm in a situation, it's early in the hand. I've got suited connectors. I don't know if I'm going to win it all in the end. But I've got enough that I think I've got a chance of winning it all. I might make a big bet, and I'm perfectly happy to see the other side play it out because I think I could get there, or I'm perfectly happy to win the pot immediately. I think this is what Rupert is essentially doing. He's saying, look, I think that if we go the distance, I can grow Restore to the point where I can win an election.
Yeah.
But that is a process and it will take time. So I will do that, but I'm also willing to make this deal. And if you adopt our key policies, well, you can just win it right now. And as long as you're implementing our policies, that's fine. I think Rupert's fairly neutral on which path reform go down. I suspect it's very unlikely that Nigel will actually want to do this deal.
Agreed. I mean, I can't even believe he's given as much ground as he has at this point. Because normally, when Nigel Farage politically assassinates you, he never brings you up again.
Yeah.
He'll never even mention
you. But this is actually a really good deal because the trade-offer is I get actual right-wing policies, you get to be Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
And I
that's a bloody good deal.
But also, on the sort of like right-wing policies thing, what is holding him back at this point, right? All of the polling has been done. Right, YouGov regularly poll the British public. We know we want the death penalty. We know we want burqas banned. We know we want halal slaughter banned. We know we want like immigration ended and millions sent home. Right, demographic security.
I think it's because if he agrees to upholding Christianity, to reversing Islamification and mass deportations, people who read The Guardian won't vote for him.
Yes. Or no, it's not just that Beth Rigby will give him a grilling next time he's on Sky News, you know? Like it's just like, look, man, you've got to accept these people aren't your friends.
Yes.
You've got to accept the people in the liberal media hate you, want you dead.
And look at your unfavorability. There is a large proportion of the country on the left who will never vote for you under any circumstances.
No.
Your territory is to your right. It's not to your left.
Yes. And your vacillation makes you look weak and unprincipled. Yes.
And Andy Burnham understood this immediately. The Labour Party have spent the last two or three years thinking, oh, do we go right? Do we go left? Oh, look, we can do both of these simultaneously. And Burnham just came straight in. He's like, no, we left.
Yeah. We can't win
And he's now in contention. And a number of polls are showing him that he's going to win the next election. Nigel, you need to understand. No, stop this equivocation each way. It's the right.
In fact, so
do a deal with the right.
Rupert Lowe, of course, denies what Nigel Farage said here because it's obvious that that's not the case. Like, Nigel Farage, the deal with the Tories and all this nonsense. Just nonsense, right? But then Nigel Farage went on Times Radio. And this is what he said.
Let me ask you another quick one about the leader of Restore Britain, Rupert Lowe, Nigel. He's offered to partner with Reform in an effort to defeat the political left. You've agreed to a conversation. Has there been contact today?
No. I mean, I'm not quite sure what the offer was, to be honest with you, whether it was sincere or not. But I did say yesterday, you know, I'll call you later. I expected to get an OK or 4 o'clock suits. Didn't get anything. Let's see where it goes. I think there are a huge number of Restore voters who, when push comes to shove, would vote for Reform in a general election. Because, I mean, let's be frank, you know, outside of perhaps Great Yarmouth, I don't see Restore winning a single seat anywhere in the country. But I'm always prepared to put past differences, shall we say, I'm understating that, but to put past differences aside in the interest of getting some sort of unity. So, look, I'm not closing the door on it. But I'm just sort of slightly questioning what the deal is.
Because it seems that... Well, he's already accused you of lying today, hasn't he?
Which is extraordinary. It's absolutely an extraordinary thing to have done. I'm not going to return the compliment, other than to say, you know, he's not a very easy person to deal with. But if there is a chat to be had, I will have that chat.
Right. But he did lie. He lied about the deal with the Tories. He lied about that blowing up. He lied about being in contact, right? Like, he just said there, he modifies the story. He's like, well, I expected a response back. Why did you? Well, no, you didn't say that before. Like, you know, so it is. So you're now trying to say, oh, the ball's in Rupert's court because I texted him and he didn't say okay, right? It's like, look, man.
It's the same thing that happened with the police investigation. It was the story modified. Yeah. I'm less concerned about this because this is normal political bickering.
Sure. I agree, right? But the thing is, it's not like we don't have Reform surrogates just out here blabbing, right?
Oh, they've gone mental.
Thank God for Raheem Kassam, right? He's too dumb to understand why he's actually just given the whole game away here, right? So Will's a very sensible chap, and he's just like, okay, what's the point here? Where's this unreasonable? And Raheem just like, I have some inside knowledge, because Raheem was an advisor to Nigel Farage for years, right?
Oh, nope. He's still called upon to answer questions in press conferences
Absolutely.
To this day.
He did, in fact, in this previous one we just looked at. No one in Reform wants to work with Rupert Lowe, Alistair Harrison, or Liam Porter. They as people, not their policies, are the red line, and that will never change. Right, so you're not going to put your egos aside for country, even though, as Will says, so as far as Reform Chief Advisor, you can't give me a policy reason. He says, no, I'm very specifically saying policy isn't the problem. What part of that do you fail to understand? It's like, Raheem, I don't...
That is extraordinary. If you're prepared to give up 8% of the vote when you're neck and neck with Labour... Because you personally don't like a couple of characters. And actually,
crazy.
It's mental, but...
Like, you braggadocious moron. Don't you understand that you're flapping your mouth in the worst possible way
here? I will give credit to Zaya Yusuf here, because he has gone on a number of interviews now, and he's asked about, could you work with Rupert again? And you can see that he doesn't want to, because obviously they had a falling out. But actually, the answer...
But he levelled false allegations against him.
Yeah. But actually, the answer he gives is, it's not about my comfort, it's about the country. That is well done, Zaya. That is exactly the correct response. Now, I mean, and I think he's right, but clearly it would be, I mean, for both of them, actually, for Rupert and for Nigel, for them to ever work together would be incredibly difficult.
No way Nigel would do it. I mean, literally, Raheem is saying, it's the people, not the policies.
Yeah, but if you could swallow your pride, if you could get over it, and Rupert has made the offer, so he's willing to do it, and I don't think he wants to do it, and we said he doesn't want to do it, but he's going to do it. If you can just swallow your pride, you get an extra 8%, and you will become Prime Minister of this country. And you just have to work with whatever it was, three people that you don't like very much. In fact, you don't even need... In fact, you've got a choice.
They don't have to come into your office or anything.
Yeah, you've got a choice. You can either agree to the policy platform, and then you never need to see those people, or you could water it down, and then you might end up having to see those people. But you've got options. But you get to become Prime Minister.
Yeah. So what to make of all of this, right? So Farage... looks a bit cowed here, in my opinion. I actually thought Rupert was probably a bit more aggressive than he needed to be, frankly. Because normally Farage is the sort of person who'd come out and make quite a strident argument, be a bit sort of bolshy about things. But actually...
They're both really pissed off with each other. They really don't like each other,
right?
Yeah, but it's true.
I mean, Rupert has said explicitly that he's furious with Farage.
But for the good of the country, it would be good if all of them, Rupert and Nigel, could take the Zaya approach.
Yeah,
and Rupert has started to do that, but he's still obviously quite annoyed.
But the issue probably also is policy, because remember the difference in personality. I mean, for example, Nigel Farage asked Rupert Lowe to be a Brexit Party MEP, right? Yeah. So he said, look, I'd like to come and be a Brexit Party MEP. And then when Reform was running, standing, he was like, I want you to stand in Great Yarmouth for me. Like, so Farage has solicited Rupert Lowe on all of these things.
Yes.
And it's because Rupert Lowe has been like, okay, well, if we're going to be the patriots who save the country, why are we playing the shallow end of the pool? Right? Shouldn't we be going farther to the right? And Farage was like, no, that was too far. Yeah. And it's in this distinction, this drift between them, the distance between them, that the personal issue has come up between them, right?
Yes.
Nigel Farage was like, no, I'm the leader. You should have known your place. And Rupert was like, well, that's not going to save the country.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself forward. And this is why the first thing, when Rupert was first kicked out, Nigel said, he was trying to take over the party. It's like, he can't take over your party.
Yeah.
There's no mechanism for it, right? What you were worried about, he was going to be too right-wing for you and upstage you, right?
Yeah.
And first rule of power, Robert Greene never upstaged the master. Yeah, it was always going to happen. There was going to be some fallout here. Bad blood was
created. And that is exactly the pattern with Farage.
It's
Stephen Wolfe, Robert Kilroy Silk, Gerard Batten. I mean, there's a whole long list of people who started to get popular, and you could tell the moment they started to get popular, that's when the
it's
knife
because they
the
were
back.
More right wing than Nigel Farage.
Yes.
That's why they were getting popular.
Yes.
Right. And so anyway, right. So Reform are in this position of weakness at the moment. They're declining in the polls. It's become evident that there is a sizable, a non-trivial percentage of the right-wing vote, the active, engaged right-wing vote. I mean, like, say what you like about Makefield, but Restore's ground game was incredible, right? Now, it was probably a fait accompli. You know, it's a constituency that's always voted Labour, and Andy Burnham was pitching Restore Labour, a right-wing reactionary policy to the Labour voters of Makefield. It's probably always going to be that it voted Labour, right?
Yeah.
But the flood, the energy that Restore was able to summon up can't be ignored. Why can't you get that, Nigel? Why don't you have that, right? And so you're on this downswing. You've got an insurgent party. I was watching a bunch of, like, the New Statesman, the Times podcast, the news agents, all those sorts of, you know, the libtard.
Yeah. I have to watch them as well.
Yeah, I have to watch them, right? But they're all like, oh, Restore did surprisingly well in Manchester in Manchester mayoral, didn't they? You know, 9% or whatever. That's more than we expected. It's like, yeah, it is, because we actually do represent a true force in this country. We're only, 5 months old now, you know?
Well, what we represent is the genuine British right.
Yes.
Who you have never, unless you watch YouTube, you've never heard them.
Yeah,
you've never met them. You've never seen them on Newsnight. You've never seen them on Question Time.
They're about half the country.
Yes. But they're a huge number of people, yes.
You know, the north, 90%
of taxi drivers.
They're about half the country. So we know that it is both a policy and personality issue.
Yes.
Because the policies inform the personality conflict, right? Mm. So it's an issue of, okay, this is where we stand at the moment, where Reform are on the downswing on about 23%, Restore on the upswing on about 9% in the, it's like 7-9%, that sort of area, but it's going up. So where does this look like in a year's time? Well, Farage can't really seem to get rid of the scandals. Farage isn't exactly covering himself in glory. He actually seems to have a growing constituency of people who are just like, never Farage.
So I think I see broadly where you're going here. And the thing I would say is, if Farage is going to do a deal, it should be this one.
It should be now.
It should be now. Because you will
He's never getting any stronger.
You will you're never going to get better terms than this. If you let Restore grow and grow and grow, it won't be as simple as this. It will be like, and also you've got to stand down in 100 seats or something. Yes.
And also, okay, yeah. Oh, well, I don't think he's going to win outside of Great Yarmouth. Okay, but what happens when he beats you in a constituency that you were competing in? Now, that doesn't mean he wins the constituency, you know, but if say, another Labour seat in the north, what happens, you know, we're already beating the Conservatives, right? In Manchester and Gorton and Denton, in Makefield, already beating the Conservatives. What happens when you get 15% and we get 16%?
Yeah.
Right? What then?
Yeah.
You split the vote. You should be standing down. Like, this...
Look, the nightmare scenario for Farage is that the seat next door to Great Yarmouth comes up in a by-election.
Gotcha.
And what will happen is Restore will either win it or come second, and Reform would be well below that. They'd be like third or fourth.
Yeah.
That would be the absolute nightmare scenario because he likes to pretend that they're not going to get anywhere. Actually, no, it is radiating out like Chernobyl or something from Great Yarmouth. Yeah. And you can see that from the local council seats that have gone up round there. He is strong and he is growing.
Yes. And there are also other places like on the other side of the country, sort of like Weston-super-Mare, which is like a kind of Western version of Great Yarmouth, you know.
Yes.
So it's a slightly older but left behind patriotic town, seaside town. That would also be a strong place. And they've got a strong Restore branch there already who left Reform because they're like, oh, this is not going anywhere.
Three Restore branches have popped up around me.
Yeah, the natural growth is quite scary for Reform. So it's one of those things. And it basically means that Rupert Lowe has a constituency that Farage can't touch, right? Sorry. Yeah. Get this down. So this is some polling on why people are interested in Restore Britain. And 57% say Restore are the only party being honest about the issues facing the country and among the main reason they intend to vote for them, right?
Now, demographic security again. It always comes back to that.
And then you've got some other... Where are we? Right, 36% of Restore voters said they'd be willing to consider voting for Reform at a future election. And 23% are open to backing the Conservatives. Two-thirds. Like, I love Nigel Farage's, there are loads of Restore voters out there who might support us. There are loads of Restore voters out there, but they're not actually mostly in favour of you, right?
Yep. And actually, these numbers are compared to Conservatives. Conservatives are actually the least likely to switch their vote to Reform if they don't have a Conservative voter to vote.
Mm-hmm. Because all the Conservatives who would have been have already gone.
Yeah.
And so, okay.
You're only left with the ones who are, like, really pissed off about you coming along.
And, in fact, we can see that in the Greater Manchester election because they've got the runoff. So they have two...
exactly what I'd expected to see.
Exactly, right. So just for anyone watching, so out of the 2 million people who voted, about 500,000 people voted, which is about 25%, and Labour got 250,000, which, okay, not terribly surprising, but Reform got 111,000, 112,000. Restore got nearly 50,000 and the Conservatives got over 40,000. So if we just, for the sake of just ease, say that's 100K there, 100K there, you only got about 50K, half of those transferring. So that means you say, right, I want Conservatives or I want Restore or I want whoever, and then my second choice will be Reform. And those are the transferred votes. So it's essentially a way of saying, look, because you get the second round, so it's, you're not wasting your... I think we can safely assume that Restore and Conservatives theoretically should all have transferred over to Reform.
Standard right-wing dogma, Reform dogma is that.
Yeah.
Everybody who votes for anything nominally right-wing is secretly one of our voters.
Exactly. But actually, half of them are not.
Yes.
Right. So you lost half of these votes. Now, it wouldn't have made a difference. They wouldn't have won. But it reveals to us that actually there's a large constituency, about half of the right-wing vote, that Farage actually, or about a quarter of the right-wing vote, that Farage has no access to at all because he is Farage. It's like, right, do you want to lose a quarter of the total vote that you could possibly get? The upper ceiling of your vote is reduced by a quarter because you are Nigel Farage. The Conservatives already know who you are, Restore already know who you are, and, I mean, in the case of Restore in particular, only a third of them will vote for you. Two-thirds of them will not vote for you, right? But conversely, actually, Rupert Lowe is quite popular in Reform. I can't remember whereabouts it is in here, but I pulled it out earlier. 44% of Reform voters have a positive opinion of... in fact, it'll be around here somewhere. Yeah, there we go. 44% of Reform UK's voters see him positively compared to 24% who view him unfavourably. So theoretically, that could be three quarters of Reform's vote that could go to Restore. So you've got one third of Restore's vote, but we might have three quarters of your vote.
Okay.
Right? So we can reach into your pot, into your constituency, and pull out, you know, hundreds of, probably millions of voters. But you can't reach into ours and pull those back.
That's my point earlier. If Nigel is going to accept any deal, it should be this one.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't wait a year.
Because the sands are not flowing in your direction, yes. Nigel. Right. The yes. fact that you're at this point, having to concede, well, they could do a lot of damage to us. I don't think they'll win outside of Great Yarmouth, though, but it's not the 1%. Like, the fact that you're even listening to this.
And only a month ago, the story was they will have no impact whatsoever.
Exactly. And after every single political assassination where you're like, I'm never, ever talking about that person ever again. Mm. Now you're like, well, I have to consider it. I mean, or I don't know about it. Mm. Right. It's not great, right? And so I posted this on Twitter today. So look, right, this is about big tents, right? Farage is the thing that is preventing the big tent from happening, right? He should have followed the sort of Trumpian model of saying, look, just everyone on the right is my guy, and I will rely on the alternative media, and I will judo flip the mainstream media
yeah.
by coming out with quite a hard and severe right-wing policy.
To get them arguing about the issues I want to talk about.
But that is also popular with the country.
Yep.
So if you say, look, I'm just going to deport millions, the media were like, my God, Nigel Farage is going to deport millions. And everyone going, oh, thank God, Nigel Farage is going to deport millions, right? It's just like Trump with building the wall. It's like, oh, finally, someone's going to build a bloody wall, right? It's
all those left-wing podcasts you talked about a moment ago, they will flip when they hear something like that.
Absolutely.
But that is a bubble. Everybody else would be like, brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. The front pages would be like, Nigel Farage is going to deport millions of foreigners. Yeah. And everyone's like, thank you. That's all I want.
And the BBC will run with it. Channel 4 will run with
it. It's exactly how Trump
will run with it.
Got billions of dollars in free advertising from the media because they were like, can you believe he said this?
Yes.
And everyone's like, no, but thank God he has. You know, they were excited about it. And then Nigel Farage could just go on, you know, all of the sort of the alternative media that, you know, like, I mean, probably The Telegraph, being the most sort of left wing, will have tolerated him, even with a hardline immigration policy. But he could have come, you know, gone, you know, Dan Wood and us, whoever else on the right. Like big podcasts with millions of views, he could have come over to those and been like, yeah, so this is what we're going to do. And he would have been able to get massive media attention, massive spread of his message without compromising on his message, create the massive tent and say, no, I'm not going to kick anyone out because I don't care about
them. But it does require...
It requires...
Trumpian cojones.
But he, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Which Farage just doesn't do. So he can't build the big tent. Right, he should have had all the radicals on his side, and just literally pointed them at the enemy and gone, right, go nuts, guys. You know, go and give them a piece of your mind, because we're going to deport millions of people, and that's all the thing. That's the only thing that you need to worry about, really. Trust us. You know, this is fine. Just go out and be my army out there for me. Instead, he couldn't do that. Right, he's always genuflected towards the left, towards the media, towards the consensus, where he's saying, look, I'm really one of you guys. It's like, well, I'm sorry, that's not going to be good enough.
He's always looking for a favourable hearing from people who genuinely despise him.
Who wanted that.
He's got to stop doing
it. I mean, who was it that was cheering after Anne Widdecombe was literally bludgeoned to death in her home?
Yeah.
Like, there were a bunch of them that cheered, and everyone was like, what are you doing? They were like, oh, no, actually, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. But that was their instinctive reaction.
Yeah.
Oh, God, one of the reformed people have died. They've been murdered. Brilliant. Let me tell you how much of a bigot that person was. Like, they hate you, Nigel. They cheer when you die.
Yep.
And yet, for some reason, you're still looking for their approval.
Yeah.
Mad. Absolutely mad. But the point that I'm making at the end here is that Burnham understands this.
Yeah.
He is more morally aligned with his radicals than not. Farage is not that way. And so he can never make any progress. There is nowhere for reform to go now, right? We're going to create Fortress Britain and stop the boats. Everyone's promising that. Labour have been promising that. The Conservatives have been promising that. You've been promising that.
Yeah, I mean,
I bet the Lib Dems are even promising that.
When you knuckle down to it, what's the difference in immigration policy between Shabana Mahmood and Nigel Farage? I mean, there is practically very little difference.
Zero.
Oh.
And Shabana Mahmood being Andy Burnham's Home Secretary, there's no difference between Burnham and you.
Yep.
Right? There's nowhere you can go that is actually going to place you outside of the consensus now without accidentally standing next to Rupert Lowe.
Yeah. And this is, again, the point to reform supporters who are baffled why we don't instantly support the most nominally right-wing party with the biggest percentage in the polls. They keep saying things like Restore need us more than we need them. It's like, yeah, but you're not offering anything that I want.
You're not paying attention to the direction of travel.
Yeah. If you're not giving me demographic security and your offer on that is basically, okay, I might get slightly lower taxes with you, maybe.
I mean, don't get me wrong, wonderful, but
yeah.
That's not my first issue.
My one and only issue is demographic security.
Exactly. And if you can't just come out and full-throatedly say, my God, of course we can't let the British become a minority in Britain, then there's something wrong with you. It's your policies, your attitude that fails to understand that that has to be the case. But anyway, so I think Reform's goose is cooked at this point, right? I don't see how they pull this back. I just don't see how they pull it back.
Well, very easily.
Well, I mean...
You do this deal.
Okay.
You do this deal. You firm up on stuff.
But they're not going to
win the next general election. Prime Minister.
They're not going to do this, right?
Well, yes.
They're not going to do any of these things. They've already rejected full-throatedly in the commentariat, the Reform sort of talking heads. Nigel Farage is clearly playing for time on this. He's clearly like, well, I don't know about this.
Fact that he has hesitated as long as he has tells you what a good offer it is. Because his supporters are doing the emotional ex-girlfriend routine.
Yes.
Where they're just absolutely having a tiswas about this. Like, I don't want you back. And, oh, my God, you're there with the
other. And notice they're picking on the, oh, well, he didn't call me back. Or he didn't.
They're talking about the most irrelevant nonsense, sequencing or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Farage feels that way. But you can see how good an offer it is that we're now, 3 days in, and he hasn't come out and said, just no.
Yeah.
What he's come out with is that initial statement that you showed, which was God knows what it said, and a couple of interviews where he's like, oh, blah, 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 but I'm considering it.
Yeah.
It tells you that this is a really, really good deal.
And it also shows the weakness of Reform. He hasn't got anywhere else he can go. He's being eaten up on the right flank. If the direction of travel continues, like it intersects at some point, do you want to get to that point, Nigel? How much weaker are you going to be then?
And I think on some level he must know this. And if he doesn't know it, somebody like Zaha Yusuf has figured it out and explained it to him. You don't have ground on the left to take. You have ground on the right, and you are being offered it. You just need to take the firmest version of everything we've ever talked about.
And there's nothing to lose.
You just need to give people actual right-wing policies and swallow your pride a bit and be civil to somebody that you hate.
Yeah. And Zach Polanski will complain about you and put up T-shirts with, you know, you being guilty.
And then you win.
But then you win, yeah, exactly.
So it's easy for him to turn it around. You're just assuming that he will not be able to get over his own ego.
And you're correct on this.
And you're probably right.
Yeah, I think I'm correct on this. I don't think he's going to do that. So anyway, that's where I think the situation is at the moment. And I don't think Nigel Farage has it in him to create that Big Ten. And it's his own fault. He has created the people outside of the Big Ten in the same way Starmer did. He put them there. And they are going to eat him alive. And this is why he's on the horns of this dilemma. Good stuff.
Very good.